51551. Let me bring in Mike Shannon. Mike, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Good. We were talking, it's nearly a week now, incredible stories of surviving catastrophic accidents. In your case, it was 2004, and it was generated by a call, and she was concerned. She'd been in a catastrophic accident, not her fault, by the way, but the aftercare medically was fantastic, but mentally she found it extraordinarily lacking. What happened in your case, Mike, in terms of the accident?
In terms of the accident, it happened on the 24th of May, 2004. I have a motorbike, and myself and my friends were going up to Mandela to see the British superbikes racing up there. Now, I live in Abbeyfield in County Limerick, and I live on the Limerick side of Abbeyfield. So I had arranged to meet my friends in the square in Abbeyfield.
Okay.
As you know, Abbeyfield, the N21 goes through Abbeyfield, so the square is just at the bottom of the town. So I left home at 8:15 in the morning and was driving down the main street of Abbeyfield.
Right.
And there was a car parked on the left-hand side facing me and pulled out across my path. Now, obviously, the driver of the car didn't see me coming, so I crashed into the car. And my chest took the impact. I went forward and my chest hit the pillar between the front door and the back door of the car. And obviously I was thrown back and was unconscious on the street. So my friends were just 100 yards away because I was just going another 100 yards because we were coming back up again. And they ran up and I was, as I said, out cold on the street, but they thought I was just winded. So they said to leave me alone, because a lot of people, when they come across an accident, they say not to touch the person anything like that. But for me, luckily for me, a neighbour of mine and a friend of mine, a veterinary surgeon, came on the scene. His name is Lutz. And he saw straight away that I was in danger because my whole head started to swell, my eyes, my neck and everything. So he said, we're going to have to get the helmet off him. Because, as I say, I was swelling like that, and it might cause problems to my brain and things, you know.
Okay.
And lucky enough, as it just happened, this was 8:20 in the morning, so a nurse, Mary McGill, came on the scene as well. And between the two of them, they took off my helmet. But just on the funny incident as regards the helmet, my whole neck had swollen around the strap of the helmet, and it couldn't be removed by the buckle, if you know what I mean.
Of course, yeah, it had to be cut,
so,
I presume.
So Lord said, we're going to have to cut his helmet. And he took out the scissors, and my friend was there, and he said, what are you going to do? We were to cut the helmet. Oh, so JP, don't cut that helmet at all. He's only asked paying €400 for that last week. He's going mad. But that's beside the point.
That became pretty irrelevant pretty quickly, didn't it? Because luckily enough, the veterinary surgeon who was there did something else then.
He did, yeah. He had oxygen in his van, and he kept me going with the oxygen until the emergency services came out, which would be about, they came from Newcastle West to take me into the regional hospital in Limerick. So I presume I'd be waiting maybe 25 minutes for the ambulance to arrive.
Okay, so this was a Sunday morning, 8:30, going to Abbeyfield. Reminding people, you're on a motorcycle. So you're pretty exposed, though. You did have gear on you and the crash helmet.
I did, yes.
What do you remember?
I've no memory of it at all, Joe. I have 12 days of a complete memory loss. But the strange thing about it is my memory loss began, that was on Sunday morning, the accident.
Mm-hmm.
But my memory loss began on Friday. I remember being in work on Friday. I used to work as a planner with Aircom.
Okay.
And I was doing a job sighting cable cameras down in Adair. That's my last memory. I have no memory of Saturday or of that morning or of the accident until I woke up in hospital, which was 11 days later, and inside in a ward, private ward, and my wife sitting beside me, and I said to her, "Where am I?" And she told me, "You're in the hospital." And Mary told me, and I said, "Why?" And she told me, "Because I'm after having a motorcycle accident at a crash with the bike." So that's my only memory of it. Which is really, and to this present day, I still have no memory of it.
And your amnesia extends before, what, 72 hours before the actual accident?
Before, yeah, a good 48 hours before the accident.
Okay. Now, you say you're on life support, you're in an induced coma because of the injuries to the brain, but you have some memories of the coma.
I have three extraordinary memories of the coma. And the first one is where I grew up in Abbeyfield, I had an uncle called Joe Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
And this memory is as clear to me now as, and this is 15 years ago, as it happened to me then. But as I say, I was in a coma. But the door opened of my ward. The door was on the left-hand side corner of my ward.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe came in. And Joe, you saw, was wearing a flat cap. And he just came over alongside me and put his hand on my shoulder and said to me, Mike, I heard you had a bit of a knockout. I just came in to see you.
Yeah.
I had Uncle Joe, I said. And I remember he said to me, but you'll be all right. And he walked away out again. Now, Uncle Joe died in 1982.
Okay.
Right. So the next one then I had was a cousin of mine. His name is Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a detective garda. So he came in, and I remember he used to always wear a collar and tie and a sports coat and
okay.
a pair of slacks, you know. So he came in and sat down alongside me again. Now, as I say, there's no fog or anything. No, this is just...
Okay, clear as anything.
Same as anybody coming in to visit me. So he sat down alongside me again and said, I hear, Mike, that you crashed your bike.
Yeah.
So I said, I did, Jerry. And... But he says, yeah, you'll be all right. So I said to him then, have you got your gun with you, Jerry?
Mm-hmm.
As I say, he's a detective garda. And no, he says, I haven't got my gun. Because he says, guns, motorbikes are like, and guns are dangerous. You see where guns got me. Now, that man was Jerry McCabe, the detective garda. He was a cousin of mine that got killed in Adair in 1994.
So when you, but this, on the one hand, when you woke up after the induced coma, out of the induced coma, so to speak, and life support, you had to ask your wife, where am I?
I had, yeah.
But on the other hand, you say when you were in the coma, you have these vivid memories, you have vivid memories of when you were in the coma of being visited by two deceased people, one of them Detective Garda Jerry McCabe, God rest him, killed in Adair in 1994, and the other was your cousin Joe, both of them deceased, and both of them reassuring you that you would pull through.
Be all right. But the final visitor then I had was my Auntie Kathleen.
Okay.
Now, I was raised by my Auntie Kathleen here in Abbeyfield, and... She came in, she was a small grey-haired woman, and she was always wearing one of these house coats, a polka dot house coats. And she came in, and she sat down alongside me again, and she was always calling me Lanav when I was growing up with her.
Baby, yeah.
And she started rubbing my forehead, and she said, Lanav, my little Lanav, you'll be all right. And the conversation continued for another little bit piece of time with that. Then she said to me, I must go now, will you come with me? So I said, no, Auntie Kathleen, I can't go with you because my Mary and Rebecca are coming down to see me at 6:30. And if I wasn't here, they'd be disappointed. So she left then. But I have a feeling myself now, I'm not religious or I'm not into afterlife or anything. But I think if I had said yes to Auntie Kathleen, I'll go with you. I don't know, I might have passed on.
And you were given the last rites twice, I see, as well.
So
you were in serious, serious difficulties.
I was,
But Mike, when you start explaining this to people, do they not say, Mike, are you sure? Are you okay in the head? Pardon my language. But did they say must be... Obviously you were... In other words, did those memories come after... Obviously, you're talking about them now, but you're adamant those memories are from the coma.
They're from the coma because a few days after I came out of the coma, I even spoke to them about my wife. My wife was the first one I told. And that was fairly immediately after coming out of the coma. But even when I came out of the coma then, I was in the hospital then for another few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to, now rehab in Dublin was mentioned as well, but thankfully I hadn't to go there. And my rehab was here at home with my wife. And even for I'd say a good 2 months after the accident, everything felt surreal to me, as if I was, how can I explain, if I was just looking on, that I wasn't really here. Okay. Even though I was here at home, you know. But thankfully, I was able to return to work after 6 months, and I've made more or less a full recovery.
Now, you know, Mike, that when people talk about near-death experiences, or people have died, their heart has stopped or whatever, they talk about a tunnel and a light at the a tunnel and light. Does that ring a bell? No,
no, it does. Yeah. No, there was nothing like that with me. It was just the same as a person actually coming in visiting me in the ward. There was no fog, no lights, no tunnels, and you know, just, and they were dressed the way I remember them always, you know. But it was just as real as if I was just talking to somebody in the room, you know.
How long were you? I know you mentioned that you worked. You mentioned in your letter that you work in aircom. How long were you out of work for?
6 months.
Wow.
6 months.
And what about? I mean, was it an issue for you, that aftercare in terms of psychology and mental health? Did that arise for you?
It did, yeah. I saw a psychologist for a few months afterwards.
Okay.
But I gradually came around. The only effect it has on me now is my memory is very slightly. I'm terrible for forgetting people's first names and people, now acquaintances, people that I wouldn't know very well, but I'd know their names, you know. And little things like that, you know. I might go out to the garage for something, and I drive outside in the garage and say, what did I come out here for?
Yeah, okay. Then
people tell me that's to do with age as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Back on a motorbike.
I did, Joey. That time I had the accident, my own motorbike was a write-off after that. So about 12 months after, there was a big European Harley-Davidson rally in Killarney. Called a hog rally.
Okay.
So I said I always have a sports bike. So I bought a Harley Davidson, and that was a step back into bikes, because you know a Harley Davidson. My wife was with me, and she thought that all these guys that were driving Harley Davidsons were just cruising around. They were all fogies like myself. So that was my step back into bikes. A year after, I went back into bikes again. And I changed the Harley Davidson, so I'm driving. It's called a sports touring bike now, Kawasaki. But I joined an organisation that was formed in Limerick in 2014. It's called Blood Bikes Midwest.
Brilliant, yeah, brilliant organisation.
So I'm a member of that, where we supply emergency equipment and blood and things to the HSE.
Great work. Okay.
On a voluntary basis. So. That's really my story, Joe.
Wow.
I just why I was anxious to tell it is that it's just not all. I know
there is recovery. Yes.
But there is recovery,
Wow. Fair play to that vet with the oxygen in the van and
indeed,
getting the helmet off you quickly before. Yeah.
Definitely,
okay.
Indeed.
Okay. What's your family's reaction when you tell? Go on the one hand, you say I'm not religious. You didn't use the word spiritual, so I'm not going to use that word. But you say I'm not religious. But on the other hand, you're telling the story of being visited when you were in a coma by Jerry McCabe and your cousin Joe. Both of them saying, both of them deceased, unfortunately. But both of them saying you will pull through. And then your aunt saying, "Do you want to come with me?" But what's the reaction of your family when you initially told them this story?
Well, they were a bit scared, really, but I think they understood. No, my own reading in it is just it was just my mind playing tricks, because in a way I had, with their visits, it had started to take me back to my youth, you know, because as I say, my uncle Joe died in 82, and he was come down when I was building my own house. I was only in my early 20s. And he was come down, see was everything going all right. And the same with Jerry McCabe. Jerry McCabe my auntie Catherine was Jerry's aunt as well. And I remember Jerry used to be doing security work for Jerry Collins. He was the minister for foreign affairs at the time here in Abbeyfield. And when he'd be off shift, he'd come up here home to us. And that's so they're all going back to my youth, right. Really, yeah. In a way, you know. Which okay. I find a bit weird about it, but as I say, there's no fog, no anything. It's just people coming to visit me, and I can remember the chat.
Okay. Mike, great to hear from you, and great to hear you're so well, and well done on the blood bikes, and safe travelling above all. That's Mike Shanahan in Limerick.